Welcome to the Rewrite Your Story with Tasha Jo podcast, where we fearlessly dive into the vast realm of thoughts, ideas, and conversations that know no bounds. Buckle up and prepare for a wild ride as we venture into uncharted territories and explore the unexplored. On this journey, we leave no stone unturned and no topic untouched. Tune in, fasten your seatbelt, and prepare for a roller coaster ride through the vast expanse of human curiosity. Get ready to be amazed, enlightened, and entertained, because on this podcast, there's only one rule. There are no rules. Hello, beautiful friends. Welcome back. On today's episode, I have a very special guest, my mom. And today's topic, we are going to be talking about grief and being a survivor of suicide. And I'll go ahead and welcome you on. Welcome, Wendy.
Hello, everyone.
And I'll let you start.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to say that this isn't just my story. This is a story that belongs to a lot of people when they're faced with grief. And when and if that day ever happens to you, in my experience, I died that day, and I didn't know how to navigate. And the pain and the heaviness, the broken heart, my heart being shattered into a million pieces, I didn't know, I can honestly say, I didn't know the meaning of grief until it hit me upside the head. And the way I described it, and I can only reflect back on my experience, is grief was so heavy that I felt like Godzilla was sitting on my chest.
Yeah.
And I couldn't move. I was paralyzed and pinned to the ground. And every day from the first day, from the first night I went to sleep after that tragic day of my son taking his life, I just wanted to wake up and feel better the next day. And then day two came, day three, week two, week three, month two, month three. It was like the flu that would never go away. I was throwing up every day, is what it felt like. And when you're challenged with something like this, not everybody's handed the tools and the book on this is how you navigate. This is the timeline for grief. You start here and you're going to finish here. There is no starting point and there is no ending point.
It's different for everyone.
Yeah. And in the middle, it's just a bunch of scramble. And when people say, well, gosh, I can't believe you're still crying. It's you know, been 3 months. There is
That's somebody who's never experienced grief.
Exactly. There is no timeline. It's everybody will process and navigate the best they know how, and reach out and grasp for, which I encourage, is the tools. And I didn't know what they were, from trying to get in to see a grief counselor. I went to a survivor of suicide support group at Harrison Hospital. I read books on grief. I found myself typing into Facebook grief to find this private group called Grief Untamed. I had no idea.
Isn't that the one that really helped you?
It was my life ring. And it was sad and fulfilling at the same time. And it made me grief. You go through every emotion from sad to broken
to angry
to frustrated to powerless. And when I was in that group, I felt comfort, which felt strange to me, that I felt comfort on other people's pain. Because that group was full of people in the same pain that I was going through. And they were feeding me all of the support that I needed. Could I give it back at that point in time? No. I was in the raw of my grief. I didn't know how to communicate. All I could do was read and cry, read and cry. And now I want to give back. I want to give back to those other people that were me almost 6 years ago. that didn't know how to get out of bed in the morning to put on a pair of shoes or tie your shoelaces. The world stopped for me. And everybody else, just the rest of the world, went on. And I couldn't figure out how it just stopped for me. I was stuck. But the tools that I reached out for was, I was devastated at the thought that I would feel like this for the rest of my life. I couldn't go on like that. I had you and Tiffany and my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. I still had a life to live. And how could I continue on like this, being that dark person that I was, that couldn't pull out?
Which makes me think of the shack.
Absolutely. The sadness, the big gray sadness cloud that no matter where you walk around the house or in the yard or leave the house, this cloud is just following you, this darkness. And I can honestly say, and I'd like to share this, and it's been almost 6 years for me now, and I can tell you right now, I'm not grieving, I'm healing. And I'll continue to heal for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. The grieving part is the hard part. And that takes time. I'm on almost 6 years right now. And it's
still an everyday thing.
It still feels like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably always will. But I knew that I needed to find Wendy again. I needed to be Wendy again and live my life. I didn't leave this planet. My son did. And once you can accept the trauma and what happened, that's when you're going to start healing.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, you're grieving and you'll continue to grieve. I actually also went and seen a grief counselor, and she said, Wendy, as I'm just crying, I cried for the first year you didn't see me without tears. Mm-hmm. I couldn't stop the flow. And she says, Wendy, I know you don't believe this right now, but you're doing a really good job on your grieving. She says, because you're allowing yourself to grieve and you're releasing mm-hmm. all that grief from your body. People that hold it in and don't allow themselves to grieve are the ones that I see 20 years later, and I'm putting them on Prozac because they don't know how to handle, because they didn't take the time to deal with the trauma.
Yeah. So what would you say was that moment for you? I mean, obviously it was, and it still continues to be, but was it the Facebook group? Was it watching The Shack? What moment was it for you where, you know?
Where I could say that I was starting to heal and not grieving.
Yeah.
There's just so many factors in that. Once again, there's no timeline of that it went A, B, C, D, E, F, G. It was a scramble. So I kind of have to put it all together. And looking back, I think anybody that grieves, there's no minimum or there's no maximum, but that first year, the 1 year marker, all the firsts, their first birthday, they're not here, your first Thanksgiving without them, their first Christmas, Veterans Day, if they were a veteran, just the triggers of that they're not here. You've got to get through all those firsts in the first year. And I remember it being the 1 year anniversary, and you had actually invited me to go to the beach or something that day.
Oh, yeah.
And I just wanted to be alone that day. I was exhausted. I've cried for a year. And I actually was out here. We're on outside on my deck here right now. And I just had my space set up with, you know, my Buddha and my smudge and my candle and some flowers and a picture of Stephen. And of course, I was crying. And I just, that day, I said, Wendy, enough. You've got to stop. You've got to start living again, and you have to find joy in your life again. It's okay to laugh. It's okay to be happy. You've spent one full year grieving your child. Now it's time to start living again.
And I want to touch on that too, because during that first year, it wasn't just the grieving. There was a lot of that anger and blame and which led you to, you know, we'll talk about The Shack, and that is a movie that we both highly recommend you watching if you are somebody who is in the process of grieving right now, or even just in general. It's such a good movie. We've both seen it like, what, 10 times?
Yeah, and it's also very spiritual.
Very, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so how can you help other people who are going through that right now? Let's talk about the blame and how you felt during that year.
Okay, so I just feel like I can answer any of this so mm-hmm. easily because I've been through all of this.
Yeah.
Is there are so many layers to grief. And that's why everybody grieves differently. For instance, you can take the mother of the Columbine High School shooting. Her son killed I don't know how many other students that day, okay? But she also lost her child that day. But her layers were, she didn't only lose a child, she had a child that killed, was mm-hmm. a murderer. And killed a bunch of other children. And then she had to deal with society blaming her that she should have known this about her son, which she didn't know that yeah. her son had mental illness. And to wrap that up really quick, there is a documentary out on her where she does tell her story. And to this day, she advocates for mental wellness mm-hmm. that is not taught at elementary school level. Mm-hmm. So something good usually comes from tragedy. My layers, I lost my son that day is one layer. Suicide is another layer. Not everybody loses their child to suicide. Maybe they lost their child in a car accident. That's their layer. My son also burnt his house down that day. That's another layer. He left four children behind, my grandchildren. That's another layer. He had a toxic relationship with his wife that was a contributing factor to the toxicity and malfunction of all of his disgruntlement and his willingness to leave the planet, I suppose. So those were a lot of layers for me.
Which he vented to you about all their relationship problems and stuff.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But that particular morning, my son had called me, and he had been calling me every day, wants to vent about his wife. And it was 9 a.m., and I picked up the phone, and I'm like, hey, Stephen, and I was sleeping that day, and I normally get up at 5, but I must have stayed up late that night. And I was like, Stephen's like, Mom, I need to vent. And I said, oh, Stephen, I really don't want to hear about your wife's problems today. He said, okay, love you, goodbye. And I thought, wow, that was easy because
he wouldn't let you off the phone.
Oh, no, my son would never let me off the phone. But Mom. I just thought, wow, that was easy. And I went back to sleep. And then, you know, I got up and was having coffee. And I think it was a little afternoon. And I thought to myself, oh. Mental note, I need to call Stephen. You know, I didn't listen to him this morning and I need to call him. And it was probably within 10 minutes of that thought, a text came through to me from my son, basically telling me goodbye and being his mom and intuition and my inner psychic abilities, what I have. I knew it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And, I put out the SOS, as you know, to the family, and we went through the most traumatizing day of our life. And so getting back to where I was answering your question, the layers, that particular phone call, the guilt. So you can say guilt, mm-hmm. anger, sadness, guilt. I didn't take his phone call that day. Could I have saved him? What if I had talked to him that morning? I had to internalize that and live with that. I can honestly say to this day, I know that I could not have saved him.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that. And that is part of my healing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, even just talking about this, it's almost reliving it, mm-hmm. you know, thinking about it, just mm-hmm. all the steps. And
that's why I can so clearly just talk and talk and talk and talk about it. You heard me talk about it forever.
Yeah.
It is just like yesterday
mm-hmm.
and always will be. But the good thing is I'm talking about it without sobbing.
Yeah. That's huge.
You couldn't talk.
No.
I couldn't say his name.
Yeah.
The first year without
sobbing.
And that's
sobbing. Okay. You know, that was part
of it. It's okay when you're not okay.
Yeah.
So if you're going through this and you're grieving the loss of somebody you love, and I think particularly we're talking about suicide today, it's okay that you're not okay. And even for all the moms that have lost a child, it's okay you're not okay. It's not okay.
Yeah, but you will be okay.
You will be okay.
Yeah.
I remember when I went to the Survivor of Suicide group, I signed up for it. It was like, I don't know, 6 p.m. or something. I showed up. There was probably 8 of us at the table. The lady who was putting this on introduced herself and then said, go around the table. And as the introductions going around the table, I was the last person and first person. I'm so-and-so. I lost my son to suicide 10 years ago. The next person said 12 years ago. The next person said 6. And here I'm on, I think, 5 months at that point in time. And I remember feeling terrified that they're in this group 10 years later.
They're going to be in here forever.
Oh, my life is over.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. I'm fucked up for the rest of my life, because if they're still in this support group 10 years later, I'm doomed.
Yeah. But everybody's healing journey is so different.
And that's where, you know, now that it's 6 years later for me, I can look at that and say, well, here I am sitting with you on a podcast talking about it 6 years later.
It's not
that I'm in that dark place six years later.
And also, you know, I'm a firm believer, and I've said it before, your mess is your message. Your mess that you went through is meant to help other people. You know, like us doing this podcast, there are probably so many people out there we don't know. And I've always said, even if my podcast reach one person that helps or changes their life, it's worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's go back to, you said anger.
Yeah.
So I have experienced the anger, but the 99.9% of me says, how could I possibly be angry at my son who had mental illness, who was a 100% disabled vet for mental illness? How could I possibly be angry at my son who was sick?
Mm-hmm.
And I never like to use the word that he committed suicide.
Yeah.
Felons commit.
Yes. He didn't commit anything.
He didn't commit anything. He died by suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Whether somebody dies by cancer or they die by suicide, there are people out there that condone suicide as being a selfish act.
Yeah.
And so once again, I need to stick point here with the anger. Yes, I have experienced the anger with he left and he's pain-free. He's in a better place, but he left that pain for me and his children to endure, and you.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Tasha saying to me one day, and I don't know, maybe we're over a month into this, and a very difficult time for all of us, and Tasha saying to me, and not understanding what she was saying, God, I don't know what it is. I just can't function. I just feel stuck, like I can't get anything done. And I looked at her and I said, Tasha, you're grieving.
Yeah.
We don't understand what grief does to us.
Well, at first, you know, you can be numb and then it hits you. There's different processes.
But it's hard understanding it. Didn't you feel you had a hard time understanding what was happening to you?
Yeah. I remember days I would come home and just lay on my living room floor thinking about those days. I can picture, I can feel that feeling. It was just this like emptiness, numbness, it's like unexplainable.
It is unexplainable.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't know how to even hold a conversation with people.
No.
And when you say unexplainable, the unimaginable.
Yeah.
So when you lose somebody and you get all this sympathy and people say to you, oh, I'm so sorry for your loss. I can't even imagine. That must just be unimaginable pain. You're right. It is unimaginable. And you can't imagine it. There's in your wildest dreams. You cannot put yourself in my shoes and try to imagine the depth of this pain, whether, and I'm really reaching out to moms who have lost a child, period, on this. It is unimaginable, unless you have went through it yourself, And I would tell people, and I don't want you to go through it. And I don't want you in this club. It's an unwanted journey. And it's a club you become a part of that you don't want to be in, but you're there. And you have to learn to accept it. And once you can accept it, it becomes part of you for life. My son is like another organ in my body right now. That grief of losing him, he is just another organ in my body that I will live with the rest of my life. And I do know, and there's so many quotes out there, even from Johnny Cash, you know, grief, once you enter, you know, you'll never come out the same person. And
yeah,
and your life does change that day. My husband describes me, because we can talk about it now, and we always will. Why would I not want to talk about my son for the rest of my life? It's not
you get to a place where you can talk about it, and it's coming from a different place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband described me as unrecognizable. I don't know what that looks like. I just know what I went through and what I was going through, and it was frightening.
Mm-hmm.
I was scared. That was another emotion. I was scared to death. I was frightened.
Scared of what?
That I couldn't pull out of this.
That was your life.
That Godzilla sitting on me. How can I
ever get rid of it?
I just thought, is my life over? Am I done? It was frightening.
Yeah.
I went through that emotion as well. I hope I'm explaining some of this darkness and sadness in a way that...
Well, you're explaining your experience, what that was like for you and what helped you and, you know... So again, everybody's journey. Yeah, talk about it.
Talk about it. And then I also reached out in this virtual support group, and I put out an SOS specifically to survivors of suicide on behalf of my grandchildren. Because not only was I carrying all this grief, a huge portion of my grief was my pain and sadness for my grandchildren. And how do I, because they, oh my gosh, had the questions. Mm-hmm. They want to know everything.
And you got to be careful because they're so young at this point.
Age appropriate on how much you talk to them about and what. And so I put out this SOS for survivors of suicide on behalf of my grandchildren, my four grandchildren who were 7, 6, 3, and 2 at the time, something in that. Similar
Great.
To that.
Close enough.
Close enough. And oh my gosh, I must have had, I don't know, 200 plus responses from every scenario you can imagine of, hi, my name is so-and-so. I lost my mom to suicide when I was 2. I'm now 35 years old. Or I'm 18. I lost my father when I was 4. Every scenario, over 200 replies of people trying to help me in my SOS. How can I help my grandchildren? And the biggest, with all those replies, my biggest take that I can share that most of them said, talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of those people that replied to me were saying that they grew up and felt like they could never talk about their father or mother who had died by suicide because nobody else talked about them. So then they had to deal with it when they were adults.
Well, if you don't talk about it, you're just holding it in like Mac in The Shack. And I really do want to talk about The Shack because we always reference that movie. We watch it a lot. How do I even start with that? I don't want to give away the movie for those of you who haven't seen it, but...
How about, why did we even watch The Shack?
Let's start there. Yeah.
Okay.
You lead that one.
So I'm grieving and, you know, I'd pace from room to room and, oh gosh, I mean, the spiritual, Tashi could help me with this, on all the things that were happening on his...
All the signs.
The signs, communication.
Well, because, he was coming through hot.
He was coming through hot.
He was trying to get your attention.
He was trying to get my attention. And on one particular day, and this is one of many that he communicated with me in one way or another, I said to myself, oh my gosh, because I had PTSD. I was living in that moment, and it wouldn't go away. And it was PTSD over and over and over and over again, replaying his death. And I thought, oh, Wendy, go pick a book off the bookshelf and just read some mindless Daniel Steele.
Yeah.
I don't care what you find. Read something that takes your mind off of
Yeah.
Stephen's death. So I go to the book, and I had tons of books on the bookshelf, and I just kind of scrolled my finger, and I seen one that said The Shack, and I pulled it off the shelf, and I said, all right, this one looks good. So I opened
And why did you have the, just a random book? You never bought that book intentionally, probably just buying books from Goodwill.
Exactly.
Or
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I had no idea what it was sitting on my bookshelf amongst many others. And so I grab this book and I go get comfy on the bed and open up the book and start reading it. And next thing you know, my heart is just sinking like, what the heck am I reading? And as soon as I read chapter one, it was all about the main character is called Mac. And I won't give away the book or the movie either, but he has the great sadness cloud over his head. So I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm really reading about somebody with a sad cloud over their head? Because that cloud's over my head. Chapter four, God on the Dock is the name of the chapter.
Oh, my gosh. I could only imagine reading that and just knowing. Yeah.
And my son, that is where he took his life, sitting on a dock. And I just, I knew that. And so the moral, let's say.
And then we, go ahead.
The moral of the book, the movie. And
I was just going to touch on that, too.
There could be a few takes on that. But for me, what I resonated with, forgiveness.
Yep.
And I really believe that that's what Stephen was prompting me to forgive. And I was angry at his wife. And it took me a long time to forgive my son's wife that this wasn't her fault, but that's how I felt. And she would be the first to admit, too, she didn't handle things well in how she reacted as well.
She was also grieving. Indifferently.
Indifferently. And so, yeah, we had a huge barrier between the two of us. So I feel that my son prompted me to read that book.
Absolutely.
So now go ahead, Tosh, on the
yeah,
shack, what
so
you want to say.
I will say this, and, you know, I say I don't want to give it away, but however, so in the shack, this family, they lose their little girl. And the whole point of the movie is Mac has got so much anger. How could somebody murder a child? And, you know, he just, yeah, he was like, there's no way I could never forgive this person. And
well, and he also couldn't function. We're talking about whether or not you can find joy in your life again. He had a wife and two other children.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not a functioning household after he lost one of his children.
Yeah. And it's just every time I watch it, I take more and more away from it. Even last night, you could tell I was so just like, oh, my God.
We watched it again last night. Tasha says, how many times have you watched us? I said, I don't know, five.
I would watch it 10 more.
And I would watch it again tonight.
Yeah.
Like
because
you say, every time.
There's the messages and the way they relay everything pertaining to God, source, they just break it
down.
Universe, the way they break it down.
I am.
Yes. It's just so, so good. You have to watch it, whether you're grieving or not. It helps you. I take so much away from it and apply it to all areas of my life, not just grief.
Well, another thing, and I'm perfectly okay to share this. I have always been very spiritual. And became even more spiritual beyond my wildest dreams after my son passed, because that's when things
when the door opened for me, too.
Really became evident on what was happening. And there's a lot of people that, you know, Christians and there's all different religions and a lot of people, you know, pray to God every day and dear God, this and that. And thank you, Lord Jesus. And I can honestly say, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but this is how I felt. I don't have a relationship with God. I don't have a relationship when I say, dear Lord Jesus. I have never felt connected when I tried. And I have tried. I grew up in the Lutheran church. I took my children to Crosby Chapel, non-denominational church. I used to do a Bible study with my Tasha's father years ago. I've tried. I've tried to find that connection, but I could never connect, but I can connect spiritually.
The universe.
Yeah. And in this movie, The Shack, where they have God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit there as in physical form. And Max says, so which one of you is God?
They all say, I am.
All three of them at the same time, I am.
Because we are all, and we like are all God.
And like you say, that's where I'm like, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Because I connect to the third person standing there, the Holy Spirit. That's who I'm connected to. That's who I pray to, if you will.
And that's the problem with, you know, why I just did that episode on religion and spirituality, because leave it to me. That's what my podcast is all about. Talk about the stuff that people don't want to talk about, or just the divide it causes. We all believe in the same thing. It's just religion has caused a divide. And again, to me, it's a set of rules you're following. And it's like you're a slave to that religion. Oh, I can't do this. I can't do this. Who says, you know? So I don't know. The movie's just really, really good.
So this podcast is, you need to watch The Shaft.
Yeah, seriously. So good. And then also, Stephen has came through in so many ways. I want to talk about another one besides The Shack. I think this is the most incredible thing I've seen, even though I personally didn't experience it. It was your experience, but seeing the picture of it. My mom calls me one day. I'm out walking and she's like, oh my God, Stephen's face is on the wall. And I'm like, the fuck are you talking about? And she goes, his face is on the wall. And so she took a picture, and my brother was highly intelligent, very smart. So he always finds like the craziest ways to come through and let us know he's here. But he literally created his face from the sunlight up on the wall, like ceiling wall. Was it like ceiling?
I used the reflection of the sunlight.
The curtains are shut, but just through there. And I will definitely have to.
I wish we were on a live podcast and could show you this picture.
I'll do a post.
He's
and I'll
in
like
a book. Send it. That picture's in a book.
Yeah.
An author
reached out to you.
Reached out to me.
And said, this is a pure example of the afterlife making
contact. The best one he had ever seen, and asked me if he could put
and I bought you that book. I ordered it and bought it, and you highlighted it. And it's Cyrus Kirkpatrick. He writes books on the afterlife.
Life after death.
Life after death. And there's a chapter in there and with the image. And yeah, spirit communicates with us in so many different ways. And I really tell people to slow down and pay attention, because we live in this fast-paced world and go, go, go. But I mean, it's right in front of our faces all the time. Why don't you talk about a couple of ways that he's came through besides that?
It's whether or not you're paying attention, and for me, and it's different for everyone. For me, every time I'm with my grandkids, it's a single seagull.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll literally land, 1 foot from our picnic to say I'm here. It's not two seagulls. It's always one. I find dimes in random places. The least place, where did that dime come from? I didn't leave that there. I opened up my food pantry one day and there was a dime there. I have a little dish of dimes that I just put them in the little dish. And every time I see the dime, I'm like, oh, hi, Stephen. I just say hi to him.
The water bottle or the tears?
That comes from the shack. The spirit collects tears. And you'll have to watch the movie to see that. But when I was crying early on in raw stages of grief, my 5-year-old grandson was here at the time, and he handed me an empty water bottle. And he said, here, Grandma. You can keep your tears in this bottle.
And you're like, where did you watch The Shack?
Did you watch The Shack, Emmett? He looks at me like, huh? And I'm like, okay, Stephen is now going, I'm going to get through to you one way or another, Mom. I'm going to prove to you that I'm the one who told you to watch The Shack by coming through to Emmett handing you this water bottle.
Because our minds want to be like, who, you know, like
how
you
did.
How
much proof do you need?
Yeah.
Stephen has also came through to me twice with particular songs. And this one, I would go to Tokeland all year long. It's my favorite place down at the ocean where all the seagulls are and the beach, and just a great healing place for me. And I was on one of my drives home, and it was 3 hours down, 3 hours back. And I did it every week all summer long. And I was grieving. A few times I had to pull over because my tears would affect being able to see the road while I was driving. And one of my trips home, I couldn't get this verse out of my head. It kept saying, it's hard to die when all the birds are singing in the sky. And it was driving me nuts. And So when I got home, I'm Googling, what is that song that has the verse in it that says, it's hard to die when all the birds are singing in the sky? And sure enough, the song came up. This is a song that I used to dance to in the 70s. It was just a fun hip hop, fun song, you know, hippie to dance to in the 70s. Well, the video is with it. And lo and behold, is that what I say? It's a song on suicide. And you guys, most of you will know this song, Seasons in the Sun. We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun. And that is a song on suicide. You could watch the video. And that was my son coming through to me again through lyrics of a song.
Gardening, smelling cigarette smoke.
Yeah.
The flower when it's dead. I mean, there she has gotten so.
A random yellow sunflower just bloomed in one of my dead gardens that I had never planted. And these are things that spirit can do. They can send you flowers if you're paying attention.
Or the hearts in the snow.
Oh, I know.
That one was, I mean, because our logical minds want to say, how did that happen? There are no tracks, da da da, but that's not up to us. Like, spirit can communicate in so many different ways. Literally, no tracks, and then there's like two hearts intertwined. When was that?
Just this winter.
Yeah. But was it on a specific day or
on
anything?
My anniversary.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Letting you know, hey, Mom, happy anniversary.
Yes. So I took pictures of this, and people, my cousin Janice, she says, how did you do that, Wendy? I said, really? You really think I'm going out there in the cold and I'm going to draw two hearts in the snow? I said, besides, where's my footprints?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She goes, well, I don't know. You are pretty creative. no, I didn't do that. I was just, when I see stuff like that now, I just have to take pictures of it and send it to people and show them as if I'm trying to prove to some of these people that, don't you understand that they're there? You know, that they are here with us.
I think I want to emphasize on something too. And I mean, for those of you listening who haven't listened to previous episodes, because I have kind of touched on this a little bit, but, you know, manifesting and everything comes down to the feeling, when especially spirit will come through when you're putting that feeling out that you just need them at that time. You are like really hurting. Yes. And that was that's when I learned what manifesting was. You know, we know all these words and whatnot, but I never truly knew the definition of manifesting until I manifested something unintentionally with the medium, you know. And I did talk about that recently, where I was grieving and I was crying and just saying, I just want to talk to a medium, like in Ghost. And then I got home that night, my phone rings, and a medium reached out to me. I'd emailed her weeks before, just, hey, my name's Tasha, and contact me. And she just says, I'm booked out, but for some reason, my computer froze, my head started pounding, I knew I needed to reach out to you. And then she just starts saying all this stuff, and I'm like slowly walking around. And then I knew in that moment, I had a tear run down my cheek. I knew Stephen was talking to me. It's just stuff that nobody knew anything. And mediums are expensive and didn't charge me. I got off the phone. And I was like, how the fuck am I going to tell people I just talked to my brother? This was the beginning of my journey, too. And it wasn't until I had told a friend, and she was like, oh, my God, Tosh, you manifested that. And I'm like, what? What does that mean? Because I put that feeling out there. It's all vibrations. I was like, I'm hurting. I just want this to stop. And then that came through. And that's when my healing started getting better.
Well, it's even when that image of his face on my wall, you said to me, oh, my gosh, Mom, thank God you took a picture,
because
people think you are off your rocker.
And at the end of the day, though, too, it doesn't matter if people believe you or not. You know,
no,
it doesn't matter what they think. We are all on our own journey, and it will happen for them. I mean, even as much as I'm the person, as you've witnessed on my journey, like just wanting to tell everybody everything. But until you have these experiences, you can hear things, read things, but it's the experiences that have taught me the most, for sure.
And another thing I want to touch on, that more than likely, and even being in my grief to untame, when I would bring my hurts and pains to that group, and And they would share with me, and all of a sudden, okay, everything I just said is validated because all these people are saying they went through it themselves. So, and that's where the comfort comes from, because you're feeling so all alone with these pains in so many different areas. And then when you're in a support group and you can see that, oh, okay, I'm not going crazy. This is normal to feel this way. Another thing you can experience is, so you have a circle in life, okay? And then you go through a very traumatic experience such as this, and your world becomes very dark.
Circle changes.
That circle changes. And my circle shrunk to protect myself.
Mm-hmm.
And as sad as it is, a lot of that circle could be family. The people that you really felt were your people that would just hold you up and not let you fall were the ones that weren't there for me. And I have my circle, and I just, and not that I discarded these family members.
No, but even you and me, you know, I was at a different place in my healing at that time, a lot further. And so I'm trying to be the light, but you weren't, you still had to go through that. You know what I mean? That's where I knew I had to, it's a little windy out here. I knew I had to just step back and give you the space to do that.
Absolutely. But even comments like, and I don't want to say names or anything, but, you know, a comment of that I got from a certain family member that says, Wendy, and I think I was on probably month five.
And which is so recent.
Oh, that's so rough.
It's like day two.
But back when you're going through it, never went through it before, you don't really know how that really is the raw stage, but you're thinking it's been 5 months. And for people that haven't been through this, so one of these people that I'm referencing says to me, Wendy, I thought you were stronger than that.
Mm.
Like, really?
Mm.
It's been 5 months and you're still crying? Like,
yeah,
I don't really. She told me, I just don't want to be around it. I was actually told, I don't want to be around you because all you do is cry. But my core circle.
Yeah.
Like, my best friend in South Carolina. I said,
you can cry as long as you need to.
You're probably getting sick of me cry the same old cry every day. And she goes, Wendy, keep crying.
Mm-hmm.
She supported me and allowed me to get through that.
Yeah.
But not every, but so on that, did I discard these family members? No. Is what it is they'll never understand.
Yeah.
Unless they go through it themselves.
But also, you know, with your circle changing, I think that's part of life. And I would hope and think that everybody's circle is constantly changing. It's not about how long you've known people or how long you've been friends with people. Like, if we're evolving, some people aren't going to. You're going to be constantly evolving and growing, and that's going to attract more people on your same vibration. And the people who aren't doing that are going to fall off, and that's okay. I mean, look at my journey the last 4.5 years, and I've always been somebody with a large circle of friends, and you've seen my circle. I'm still friends with everybody, but my tight-knit circle.
Yeah.
You know, it changes, and I think that's a good thing. You start discovering and realizing who your people are, your tribe.
Yeah, find your tribe and love them hard. Hey, I want to throw out there that I personally, and probably Tasha too, could talk about this subject alone for 10 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Literally. And I was talking with Tasha with her business at Mystic Movement, and they put on a lot of different healing events. And I've mentioned a few times to her that I'd be willing to host a support group for, see, I'm kind of
survivors
with my layer of survivors of suicide, but also fall into, you know, losing a child.
Or just losing anybody
grief,
in general.
But and we talked about that earlier. So when I first was reaching out for help myself, I had, you know, I'm looking up all these support groups and contacts, and I'd make the phone call or send the email. And I had this one lady call me back and told me that I wouldn't be a good fit in their support group because they had basically grieving people who had lost loved ones. Maybe they lost their mother or their grandmother or a child or whatnot, but they were grieving. So those layers. Me having such a traumatic with all these layers of suicide and the burning of the house and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's different.
I was not a good fit into that group for support.
So suicide just...
So I went to the Survivor of Suicide support group. So if anybody out there has any desire to have Mystic put on a support group for...
Or for people who are suicidal even to attend these.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah. I think it's much needed. And
anybody that's suicidal needs to know how much they're loved.
Yeah.
And I think anybody that can leave this planet by choice of suicide honestly does not feel they are loved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they, once again, it's them that don't feel they're loved because they're very loved.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, we could talk about this all day long. So we'll go ahead and wrap this episode up. Definitely reach out. Let us know. We'll do a post and I'll post on Instagram the picture and the signs that in the ways that my brothers came through. But let us know if you want us to put together a, what would it be? Just like a
grief support group.
Yeah, grief support
group. Whether it be on suicide or just grief.
Yeah, let us know your thoughts on all of it. And thank you so much for coming on. Next time, maybe we'll do something a little bit more lighthearted, you know, not so heavy. But this is...
But this feels good.
Yeah, this is much needed. These are the topics and the things that more people need to talk about and know that it's okay to talk about and should talk about it.
And so, if anybody out there is in the raw stages and feels their life is hopeless as I did...
You'll be okay.
You'll be okay.
And watch
and
the show.
I am living proof.
Yeah.
To day tell you, I have been to the darkest hole of my existence, and I am living proof that I survived, I pulled through, and I am healing and very grateful for my life, and I'm happy.
Yeah, me too. I'm grateful for you. I love you.
I'm grateful for you. I love you.
And we will see you all soon.